This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There is a reason the name Patricia Kernwinkle still sparks outrage more than five decades after the Manson murders. A reason that has nothing to do with her age or her prison record or the stack of glowing psychological evaluations she's collected like merit badges since the 1980s. That reason is blood. And no amount of merit badges or book it stamps on your pin to get your personal pan matter when there's blood. Not metaphorical blood, but real blood. Abigail Folger's blood splattered across the front lawn of a Los Angeles home. Lenny Bianca's blood soaked into his bed sheets and refrigerator. Blood used like ink, turned into slogans, messages, ideologies. The so-called Helter Skelter doctrine carved into American history by a group of young adults who called themselves a family but functioned like a death squad. Yes, this was your life at one point in time, Patricia Kernwinkle. And just because you're 77 years old doesn't mean you weren't part of it. Doesn't mean the impact that you made is still not felt today. She once again is asking to be let go. Once again, the state said no. This time, Governor Gavin Newsom stepped in, reversed the parole board, and kept her exactly where she belongs. And before you roll your eyes at another aging inmate being denied freedom, thinking, but she's reformed, pause. Because this case isn't about an old woman in a jumpsuit. It's about a young woman who gleefully chased another through the dark, tackled her, and stabbed her 28 times. It's about ideology turned into action. It's about what happens when a person becomes not just a killer, but a willing cog in a murder machine. Yes, that bitch. Let's go back to August of 1969. Two nights, seven people, two homes in Los Angeles that would become crime scenes so horrific they'd permanently alter the city's soul. The first was Cielo Drive, a home once rented by Terry Melcher, Doris Day's son, and a record producer who had rejected Charles Manson's music. Manson didn't forget. The house was now being rented by director Roman Polanski and his pregnant wife, actress Sharon Tate. On August 9th, while Polanski was out of town, Sharon Tate was at home with friends. Jay Sebring, a celebrity hairstylist, Abigail Folger, heiress to the Folger coffee fortune, her boyfriend, was a polished screenwriter, and Stephen Parent, an 18-year-old visiting the caretaker. It was a quiet evening until just after midnight when the Manson family arrived. And so did she. Yeah, the one asking for parole. Charles Tex Watson, Susan Atkins, Linda Kasabian, and Patricia Kernwinkle. The orders from Manson were clear. Kill everyone inside. Make it shocking. Make it meaningful. Send a message. They could have said no. But they were brainwashed. Yes, they were, but they had agency. And they were adults. And they made their choices. And society made their choices, too. They said, you're going away forever. Tough shit. Stephen Parent was shot first. Then the real carnage began inside the home, and it wasn't just random. It was intentional, prolonged, and theatrical. The victims tied up, terrorized, stabbed, shot, mutilated. Sharon Tate begged for the life of her unborn child, and they killed her anyway. Patricia Kernwinkle, according to trial testimony, chased Abigail Folger out of the house, tackled her on the front lawn. Abigail was bleeding, terrified, and still trying to run when Kernwinkle drove a knife into her body over and over. And now, bitch, because she's 77 years old and looks like a grandma, we should probably let her go, right? No, we shouldn't. She stabbed her 28 times. not in a rage, not in a moment of panic, in cold, methodical obedience. And if your brain's capable of doing that once, guess what? It's capable of doing it again, and you've demonstrated it. So we have a nice cage for you, and it's called prison. And you can't get out again because you got book it badges. And that wasn't the end. Manson, ever the puppeteer, wanted more. The very next night, he selected new victims. Leno and Rosemary LaBianca, a wealthy couple living in the Los Feliz neighborhood. This time, Manson even went along for the initial break-in, tying up the victims before leaving his followers to finish the job. And again, Patricia Kernwinkel was in the thick of it. She stabbed Rosemary LaBianca while her husband was being slaughtered in another room. Then she used the couple's own blood to write on the walls, "Helter Skelter, Rise, Death to Pigs." Those weren't just parting messages. They were ideological graffiti, and no amount of time in prison absolves you of this. Psychological warfare, branding. It wasn't enough to kill. They had to leave a signature. And here's where the conversation turns, because yes, Kernwinkel was 21. Yes, she had fallen under the control of Charles Manson. Yes, she was immersed in LSD, isolation, abuse, and manipulation. But she wasn't unconscious. She wasn't blacked out. She wasn't a robot. She was conscious. She had agency. She had control. And she was able to make choices. And those are the choices she made. Present and deliberate choices that she made. Goes back and says, "Oh, all those years, it was a bad choice. I was young and dumb." Yes, you were, and you made some really young and dumb choices. We should have just put you down when you were 21, but unfortunately, we're a little more humane here than that. And you made it to 77. Enjoy your canteen. And shut the fuck up. You chase down a bleeding woman across the lawn to make sure she dies. That's not a symptom of cult control. That's a choice. When you fast forward 56 years, Kernwinkel has been behind bars longer than any other woman in California history. Is that true? That seems like a lie. I don't know. I don't know if that fact is accurate. She's been up for parole more than a dozen times. She's earned college degrees, volunteered in prison programs, counseled fellow inmates. Great. That's your new plight in life. I'm glad you did that, and I'm glad you found a way to help others after the horrible things you have done. It still doesn't let you out. Her disciplinary record is pristine. She trains service dogs for disabled people on the outside. She is, by all institutional metrics, rehabilitated. Keep training the dogs on the inside, bitch. That's her case for release. To be fair, it's a strong one on paper. In fact, in both 2022 and again in May of 25, the California Board of Parole hearings agreed. They found her eligible for parole. But there's a check on that system, and it exists for a reason. In California, the governor has the right to reverse or modify parole grants for people convicted of murder. Thank God. And that's what Newsom did twice. And it's not politics. If one were to guess, you'd think Newsom would have let them out. No, he said, mm-mm. It's judgment, it's law, it's about public safety, and critically, about the standard of insight. See, parole isn't just about whether you've behaved well in prison. It's not even just about whether you'd likely reoffend. It's about whether you can articulate in granular detail how you came to commit an act of unthinkable violence and what's fundamentally changed in your psychology to ensure that it will never happen again. It's not enough to say, "I'm sorry." It's not enough to say, "I was under the influence of a cult leader." You have to dissect it, deconstruct it, show you understand the precise mental shifts, pressures, and moral failures that led to your choices. Because that's what they were. They weren't Charlie's. They were yours. And that's where Patricia Kernwinkel fails. In Governor Newsom's 2022 reversal, he cited her inability to fully explain her own motives and mental process. He noted that while she expressed remorse, she still minimized her responsibility, and she has, in interviews, time and time again, plays it down. And if you did that stuff, you probably would need to just continue on with life and not find a bed sheet and roll off the top bunk, which, by the way, if happened today, Patricia, no one would give a shit. So wrap it up and roll. In 2025, it was more of the same. Her remorse might be real. Her good conduct might be sincere. But her own account of how she turned into a killer, still foggy. Still surface level. Still too fragile to trust. Because she's a broken human being. And she never will be safe to be out. This isn't nitpicking. It matters. Because the same mental vulnerability that led her into Manson's grip could, in theory, lead her down another dark road. Even without violence. Even without crime. And that possibility, however remote, matters. When you've already painted with blood. Let's address the uncomfortable counter-argument. What more do we want from someone? I don't know, death? If decades of good behavior, education, and remorse aren't enough, what is? Nothing. Are we just holding her hostage to a crime from 50 years ago? Yes, we are. Is it justice or vengeance? Justice. Because she's not innocent. If she had nothing to do with this, if she was a bystander, someone who just followed Charlie, was in the room, didn't participate in any of it, there'd be a little different look at Patricia. But that's not reality. And as I like to say, we like to deal with reality on reality's terms, not feelings. Not just, ooh, this, oh, come on, she seems nice. Yeah, she seems super nice when she stabbed the woman 23 times in the front yard. And then used her blood as art supplies. It is a fair question, but it starts from the wrong place because not all crimes are created equal. Not all sentences are about the future. Some are about the past, about preserving the moral structure of the law, about signaling to society that some acts fall beyond the reach of forgiveness. And if you do this shit when you're a kid and you're 21, guess what? You're going to die in prison when you're 78. We don't care. The Manson murders weren't just brutal, they were performative, they weren't just about death, they were about ideology. And Patricia Kernwinkel didn't just participate, she evangelized. She left messages in blood, she carved meaning into death. And for that, she doesn't get a pass. Not even a late in life one. The idea that an elderly person no longer poses a danger misses the point. The question isn't just, will she do it again? It's, can society allow someone who did this, like this, to ever reintegrate? There's a reason Sharon Tate's sister, Deborah, still shows up to every parole hearing. There's a reason the families of the LaBiancas still call in and write letters. It's not about revenge. It's about preservation. It's about guarding the line between right and wrong. Because if you erase the consequences for the worst crimes, if you turn 7 ritualized murders into a 50-year inconvenience, you collapse that line. Let's zoom out a little, shall we? There's been a shift in the parole landscape. California now uses youth offender and elder parole considerations. It looks at trauma, age at the time of the crime, psychological maturity. It gives weight to things that frankly weren't considered in the 1970s and 80s. And that's a good thing. It's humane. But it does carry risk. Because when a system becomes overly focused on rehabilitation and risk scores, and a system that doesn't do very well at rehabilitating or assessing risk scores, it can forget the one thing that should never change, the weight of the original crime. And here, the weight, it's crushing. Let's say she walks free. She moves into a halfway house. She gardens. Maybe she volunteers. Maybe she disappears quietly into the background of American life. What does that say? To victims' families, to future parole boards, to society at large, to the next wannabe cult members. It says you can help murder a pregnant woman, you can stab someone nearly 30 times, you can write in blood as art supplies, and still, if you live long enough, you play the system right, you'll eventually walk out the door. That's not justice. That's math. And it doesn't work here. You know why Patricia Kernwinkel can never come home? Because what she helped unleash wasn't just pain. It was chaos. Manson's cult broke something in the public psyche. They weren't just a group of hippies gone wrong. They were a cult of personality, of violence, of meaninglessness. They mocked morality. They replaced it with performance, with slaughter as spectacle. And Kernwinkel didn't resist. She didn't waver. She signed the blood-soaked manifesto with her own hands. So no, she stays. Not because she's dangerous, but because the damage she caused can't be undone, and letting her go would only compound it. We can have compassion. We can acknowledge brainwashing, trauma, and control. We can believe that people change. But some crimes are permanent, and this is one of them. Give me your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not there, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, and you will find us. Do the same thing wherever you download podcasts to find us there as well. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.